everybody. Welcome to episode 628 of the Comic Source Podcast. I'm your host, Jace.
I'm Manny.
And this is an Aftershock Monday episode. And today, Manny and I are going to be talking about one of Manny's favorite books from Aftershock. I think it's pretty okay, too. It's Super Zero. We're going to be covering the first issue. Let me give the creative team really quickly here. It's written by friends of the show, Jimmy Palmiotti and Amanda Connor. We've got art by Rafael De La Torre, colors by the incomparable Marcelo Maiello, letters, book, and logo design by John J. Hill, and there's various covers by Amanda with Paul Mounts coloring, and there's also a Darwin Cook variant, and I think there might have been some retailer exclusives also. Maybe not, though. It was pretty early in Aftershock's history, which maybe why the book didn't really sell as well as Jimmy and Amanda had hoped. You know, they're pretty high in popularity and name recognition at the time this came out because of their work on Harley Quinn. And I would have thought that a lot of the people that really enjoyed Harley Quinn would have liked this. It didn't have the legacy feel that Harley had as far as, you know, Harley's long history with Batman and the Bat Family and the relationship with Joker and such. It was, you know, brand new from a brand new publisher. And so, you know, didn't have Amanda art, only covers. So, yeah, I'm not really sure why it didn't take off because it's a really good story and a lot of fun. So I'll chalk it up to the same reason that my favorite book from Aftershock didn't really take off, even though it was very high quality. That's Replica. And I kind of attribute both to just, you know, it was an unknown publisher at the time. And it's hard for retailers to take a chance on something that's an unknown when there's so many books to choose from and the shelves are crowded and comics are expensive and there seems like there's fewer and fewer readers. So be that as it may, I think they would come back, the creative team. Jimmy and Amanda would definitely like to come back to this property. But from what I know, they don't want to do it without Rafael De La Torre, and he's working on Animosity now, which did become a runaway hit for Aftershock, probably one of their best-selling, if not their best-selling book. And so he's busy doing that, and Jimmy and Amanda don't want to do Super Zero without him. So I don't know. I think if there was enough demand for it, even if they couldn't get Rafael back, they would find an artist with a similar style and come back to it, or maybe Amanda herself if she had the itch to do some interiors. But the timing has to be right, so I guess we'll have to wait and see. What are your thoughts on Super Zero? I know you really like this title, Manny. Is it your all-time favorite Aftershock title?
That would be hard to call it their all-time favorite Aftershock title, but it is the one that got me into Aftershock. Well, actually, after Replica, because I read Replica first and recommended it to me, and then that I noticed Super Zero, which is why I picked it up at a comic book shop. And then it was like, oh, this book's amazing. And then it leaves you with the cliffhanger. I'm kind of at the same point with that book as I am with Clone. There's a damn cliffhanger, and it's like, wait, whoa, okay, now what happens? Like, because it's a really good story. But, I mean, gosh, this is one of the reasons probably I'm probably one of those annoying people to Jimmy, because I ask him about it every freaking time. And he gives me the same answer. I will not do the book without Rafael De La Torre. And I'm just like, I need answers. The only other person who I think hates me for the same reason would be Mark Silvestri, because I ask him about Rise of Magi all the time also. Like, I can't even help myself. Like, it's the first thing I want to ask them. So it's the same thing. But I mean, it's just because of, you know, the premise of the story. It's a kid who wants to be a superhero. And the only way they know how to become a superhero is by trying to mimicking things from stories, like, you know, that, and we'll cover that throughout the issues when we go through them. But yeah, it's a great title. And like you said, I'm saddened that not a lot more people picked it up. But like you said, this was Aftershock's early days, and they've done very well since then.
Yeah, now I wonder how well it's done in trade. If it's because I think that was, you know, that's always the make or break, you know, like even if it doesn't do that well in the monthly issues, if it can do well in trade. But, you know, again, it was early and it didn't get promoted maybe as much as, or get as much press as maybe some of the other stuff might have. So, but yeah, I for me, you said you had a hard time picking your, you know, favorite Aftershock. There's a lot of really good stuff. There's a lot of like 9 out of 10s. But for me, there's only one 10 out of 10, and that's Replica. Like Replica, you know, I was talking about it on last week's Aftershock Monday episode, and I said that every time a new title comes out from Aftershock, I wonder, is this the one that's going to knock Replica off its perch as my all-time favorite, or at least slide it over and make room and it'll be, you know, tied. But man, so far nothing has equaled Replica for me. I am able to choose an all-time favorite Aftershock title, and it is Replica. What else do you have that rivals Super Zero in your Aftershock catalog?
Actually, it's one of the newer titles that I think it's just fantastic, the premise of it, and that's Lollipop Kids. I love it. Lollipop Kids is one of them. Animosity has a really good premise, and I mean, the whole Honeybee arc was fantastic. And then let me see what else is there from Aftershock, because I need to see a list in front of me, because I kind of Shipwrecked was good. Warren Ellis, I really like that. Of course, the James Bond spinoff,
Jimmy's Bastards.
Jimmy's Bastards was fantastic. So, yeah, there's a ton of really good books, that I mean, just really, really, really good. I mean, what do you want? But oh, and then of course, the one that the arc just ended, Lost City Explorers. That's another really good one. Monstro Mechanica, also really good. And of course, oh my God, how can I forget? All right, yeah, my all time favorite. I don't know how I didn't think of this, just because I can't even believe that it's an Aftershock title at this point. Still, Rough Riders. That is my favorite book. I love Adam Glass's Rough Riders. And this, so it's Rough Riders, Super Zero, Replica, and then probably going to be Jimmy's Bastards and Lost City Explorers. Those are my five, I would say.
You forgot Lollipop Kids.
But it hasn't got far enough. I'm two issues into it, so give me a couple more.
Yeah, I was gonna say that. I was surprised to have Lollipop Kids on there, only two issues in. Don't get me wrong, it's absolutely fantastic, but it's hard to call it an all time favorite with only two issues. What I will note though is, I'd forgotten about Rough Riders too. You were always praising that book, so that doesn't surprise me if you give that the slight edge over everything else. But just like Lollipop Kids, written by Adam Glass. Rough Riders and Lollipop Kids, both written by the same. So
I mean, what makes Aftershock so great is that it's projects that these creators are really, really fond of, that they're really passionate about, and some of them, I mean, some of the books have made me a little uncomfortable, and yet I can't put them down. I know that I got into a couple of issues of Insects. That was really weird, but I was like, all right, I'm gonna keep reading this. Unholy Grail is another one that I was like, Shipwreck's another one, and then also Pestilence, and I tried really hard to continue with Baby Teeth, and I was just like, yeah, I'm not good with this, but still, I mean, they're good quality stories. It's just that I can only take so much.
Yeah, Baby Teeth is it's intense.
Exactly,
it's intense. I actually thought it was going to be, I didn't think I was going to like it as much as I do. I thought it was going to have more religion in it, and it was going to kind of turn me off. But it's pretty much a straight up horror book at this point. So anyway,
Hot Lunch Special. That's Aftershock.
Yeah, how do we forget Hot Lunch Special? That's one of the best books on stands. Like, forget about just Aftershock, but that's one of the best
Yeah,
books. I got, from any publisher. Yeah,
I didn't think that was Aftershock. I'm looking at the list of books right now. I'm just like, wait, that's Aftershock? I thought that was something else.
Yeah, that's in my top. That's in my top three Aftershock books for sure. It probably goes Replica and then Hot Lunch Special is probably my second. It's right there, and it could, depending on the end, that might be the one that topples Replica. You know, it's almost not fair to Replica because Paul Jenkins had such a longer story in mind than the five or six issues that came out, as opposed to Elliot Rahal, who's writing Hot Lunch Special. He has a beginning, middle, and end, and it's all in one arc. So that's going to be like a completed story when it's done, and it's going to have an unfair advantage in a way over Replica. But I'll tell you what, man, reading Replica number one again last week for the podcast was so much fun. I was like, oh, man, I remember how much I love this book, and I still do. It's just so much fun. And Vorgas is, Churchill's partner, the main guy, Trevor Churchill, he's just so dumb. It's just, I love that scene in the first issue where right at the beginning, they're chasing after that Grinnick's diplomat. And, he's got diplomatic immunity and he's got to be captured without any damage, without a scratch on him, as Trevor puts it. And Vorgas ends up shooting him in the head, just blows up his head. And Trevor's yelling at him like, don't you remember protocols, containment protocols? And even though the body's laying there headless, Vorgas is like, oh, I apologize. And he points his gun at the dead body and he goes, stop or I will fire. The alien's already dead at that point. It's so hilarious.
I know this isn't the right moment to reminisce, but I remember that's one of our first interviews we had on the Comic Source podcast, because I remember the exact where I was sitting, because I was in a weird spot where the only spot where I can record at that moment was in my daughter's room. So I was in a little desk. It was like a Sunday afternoon or something like that. I don't remember exactly when, but I think we had Paul on the show.
Yeah.
And that was one of the first ones. And that's where I started with Replica, and it led me into Super Zero.
Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Super Zero. First issue, Cause and Effect, as Manny intimated earlier, it's about a girl named Drusilla Dragowski. She lives in Tampa, Florida, and she loves superheroes. And not only does she love superheroes, but she believes in superheroes. She actually believes that there are people out there in the world that really do have superpowers. And she knows this to be true because she's been researching it for 10 whole years. And she also believes in aliens and life on other planets, and that periodically the Earth goes through cycles. And we're in the sixth cycle right now. So basically what happens is mankind keeps getting rebooted because they keep screwing it up and not getting it right. So what eventually happens is mankind gets to a point where their greed and carelessness with the planet gets to the point where it kind of reaches a tipping point, and they kind of circle the drain, and it takes millions of years, and eventually through evolution and everything, mankind rises up again. And there are certain people that know this, like genetically, on a genetic level. There are secrets being written in the pages of pop culture, as she puts it, and transmitted only to those who can receive the answers. So she thinks she has the plan to stop the Earth from going through another wash cycle, as she puts it. But in order for that to happen, she needs a little help. She needs a way to manifest the latent superpowers that she thinks that she has. So what she does is she goes and recruits a homeless guy, and she does have a very caring heart. So, she takes him to eat, and she explains her views on things. And, this is a homeless guy. He lives in that world. So I'm sure he's used to talking to crazy people, because I'm sure that's the way Drew kind of comes across. Talking about the reincarnation part and how there's clues everywhere. The Bible's part of it. The people that believe in Scientology have a part of it. Every religion has a little piece of the puzzle. And of course, the most obvious people that have this idea and this understanding that superheroes are real are the people that create the comic books, because they're drawn to create them. Because, and again, it was written by Jimmy and Amanda, so I'm sure this is kind of their tongue-in-cheek comment on the comic book industry. So in Drew's own words here, she says, It's in their blood. They write and draw these stories even though the job holds no security, has no health coverage, no retirement plans, and for the most part alienates them from normal society. Honestly, most of them can make more money packing bags in a supermarket, but they don't. There's a reason for that. So there you have it. That's why people create comics. They're compelled to send the clues of past lives forward through the stories of superheroes and modern myth. It's not because they're looking to get rich. So keep that in mind if you feel drawn to make comics. So after she recruits this this homeless guy, feeds him, she brings him a backpack with some things that will help him on the street, because she says, I'm a very caring person and it's in my nature to help people, so please don't take this as an insult, but your fingernails and toenails look infected, and I can smell like tooth decay and gingivitis, so here's a toothbrush and nail clippers and deodorant, baby powder, razor, shampoo, moisturizer with sunscreen in it, and a hat and sunglasses, and hooking you up with all this stuff. And the guy's like, okay, so what do I have to do? And she basically recruits this homeless guy. He's supposed to mug her parents, put on this mask that she provides him, and rob her parents at gunpoint. So as we turn the page, we don't really get an explanation for that. Other than the, the obvious one that springs to mind, little Batman reference, we turn the page and, she is in her superhero persona, which is called Paladina. And she apparently has greeted some house pets that are actually aliens. There's a cat, a parakeet, a mouse, and a dog. And she says they come from another galaxy, they come in peace, but sadly our world doesn't accept aliens that come in peace. It's a little too much Independence Day and War of the Worlds. And so she ends up fighting against the military, who are trying to capture these aliens. And to the point where when the general who's in charge of the forces confronts her, she turns his gun into a couple of atoms that are going to coalesce together and form a fusion bomb, and it blows up and destroys all the military equipment and personnel that are there, and it kind of angers the four alien house pets here, and they say, you slaughtered your own people, murder's a crime where we come from, doesn't matter the circumstances, you're going to be sent to the Phantom Zone. And she's like, wait, what? The Phantom Zone? Like from the Superman movie? And they're saying, well, yeah, actually it was in a comic first, Avengers 283 to be specific, discovered by Jor-El. They're like giving her a comic book lesson. She's like, I know that. I was making the movie reference because more people know that one. Who are you, Mark Waid? And they banish her to the Phantom Zone. And we see that, of course, all this is just a dream. She's actually fallen asleep in science class. And it's her favorite subject, but she's been working on this project of trying to gain superpowers, thus the plan of mugging. And she's been up late at night trying to get her ducks in a row, so to speak. And so she gets sent to the principal's office, and we see some of her classmates making fun of her. They obviously know that she believes that she has the ability to save the world and she's a real superhero. And they joke around and say she's more like a super zero, thus the name of the title. And while she's walking to the principal's office, she runs into one of her friends, Kevin, who's the hall monitor. And they talk on their way to the principal's office. And we get an idea that they're kind of on the lower tiers of the societal rungs of the high school here. Obviously, they're not really popular. And what we do learn when she gets to the principal's office is that the principal is actually a really good friend of hers, lives next door to her. And the principal feels somewhat responsible for Drew's lack of attention. The principal apparently provided her with comics when she was a kid. And she loves the fact that Drusilla has such a great imagination. But she worries that by not applying herself and by having her head in the clouds, that she has done Drusilla a disservice. So Drusilla gives the speech about all these people who have accomplished so much that didn't finish college like Bill Gates, or didn't finish high school like Thomas Edison, Steve Jobs, Richard Branson, Walt Disney, Coco Chanel. And the principal, Kathy Alvarez, says, you know, this speech would get a standing ovation from me if I hadn't already heard it 50 times. You need to graduate high school and then you can go out and save the world. So she leaves school. She gets home. She finds her sister and her sister's boyfriend in the pool. It's her sister's boyfriend in his birthday suit, which is pretty funny. Because when Drusilla's dad and stepmom find out that he's there without his clothes on, instead of making a big deal about it, they just kind of embarrass him in a way that will keep him from ever doing it again, most likely. And we also realize that her father and stepmother are very much into kind of nature. They're pretty granola. Hippie, I guess, would be the word that you would use. And so Drusilla seems to have an interesting home life as well. Soon she's in the bathtub and her next door neighbor, Tana, who's a couple years younger, comes over to visit. And she tells Tana all about her plan, how she recruited the homeless guy to come and mug her parents because she believes that will cause a lot more trauma in her life. Because even though her home life is not perfect, for the most part, it's pretty good. So how is she going to ever become a superhero if everything's fine and dandy, right? And she's thinking about Bruce Wayne's parents being murdered and how that drove him to don the costume of Batman. And so she needs to recreate that traumatic event. And there's somewhat of a discussion between Tana and her about, it's like, why do you want to be Batman? I'm sure he's got smart. He's smart. He's got cool gadgets, but he's just a regular guy. And Drew's like, no, he's got revenge in his blood and, you know, the dark Avenger, and it's the hidden formula for becoming a superhero. And so Tana's like, wait, so you're going to have your parents murdered? And she's like, just mugged. It'll create tension and turmoil. And I think that will unlock my superpower. So it seems like Tana has her doubts, but that's Drusilla's plan. So later on that night, her parents are indeed approached by the homeless man that they recruited. And instead of mugging them, he tells them the whole story about how Drusilla recruited him. And the parents are a little surprised, but not too surprised. I think they've been down this road before with Drusilla. But what's interesting, though, is they ask him, well, why didn't you just take the money and run? Like, if you'd never intended to mug us, like, why did you bother to come all the way over here? And she's like, well, the kid was really nice. And I know how bad choices in life can ruin you. So I wanted to let you guys know so you could, you know, address it. And they actually invite him back home with them because they feel so bad for this guy. They realize he's a war vet. He's fallen on some hard times. So meanwhile, Drusilla has she's sitting in her backyard. And she has a helmet on with a GoPro because it seems that her friend Tana, who lives next door, does not have anywhere near a good home life. Maybe perhaps she's being abused. And so Drew's trying to catch her dad in the act. And she does a little spying, but doesn't see anything that will help her friend. And when she realizes how late it is, she thinks, oh, I really need to get home, find out what happened with the mugging. And maybe her parents are still at the police station, but maybe they're home already. And when she opens the door to the kitchen, sure enough, she sees her stepmom there serving pancakes to the homeless guy. And we get the blurb of next issue, zapping insects with radiation. Because Drusilla did mention to Tana that if this plan didn't work, she may have to start irradiating insects to try to gain superpowers a la Spider-Man. So that's the first issue. It's very heartfelt. There are some moments of social commentary. You can't help but in a way kind of root for Drusilla, but at the same time kind of shake your head in exasperation at her. Some of these ideas that she thinks, you know, about the world being in its sixth cycle and it's pretty out there. It's pretty out there in a way, but I hadn't actually read this this issue in a long time, so it was good to go back and visit. It is, at the same time, both a very light read and a fun read, even if it is a little dialogue heavy. But it's one of those books where you can get more out of it if you put more into it. Like if you want to dive deep and think about some of these concepts that we're being presented with here. And I'm not talking about like the alien conspiracy stuff or the world's in its sixth cycle stuff. I'm talking about the more like societal implications, right? Like the homeless people, the possible abuse that her friend Tana is experiencing, you know, her next door neighbor, the thoughts about high school and choosing a path in life and being successful and all that stuff. There's a lot of relevant stuff here. It's not even as much of a comment on society and social commentary on being a comic book artist and believing in aliens or superheroes or anything like that, as much as it is just a look at who we are as people in a way. And I think, you know, as I said, I hadn't read it in a long time. And I think even since this book came out in, I think it was what, Manny, 2005 that it came out? Does that sound right? I mean, let's see if it's in the indice here. Yeah, December 2015. Did I say 2005? I meant 2015, the first year Aftershock was around. But even since then, as much as we thought that comics were kind of the center of pop culture in 2015, I feel like as much as I didn't think they could become a bigger part of pop culture, I think they have. I think between 2015 and 2018, there's more of an understanding. It's like when Iron Man exploded and the MCU started and everybody started loving superheroes and we got all these superhero movies and then eventually superhero TV shows, comics were, and the characters were becoming a bigger part of pop culture, like the central kind of pillar of pop culture. And I feel like even in the last 3 years since 2015, when Aftershock first hit the stands and this book hit the stands, that comics are no more at the center of pop culture than they were then. But I feel like the knowledge that the general public has about comics has grown. Maybe not for everybody, but just in general, people are more aware of a wider breadth of comics than just Marvel and DC. And I think part of that has to do with the fact that since 2015, there's probably been more independent comics that have kind of gained attention more so than just the big two. So I do feel like reading this now versus reading it in 2015, you can get a little more out of it in terms of looking at the societal impacts and the belief that Drusilla has in superheroes and all that kind of stuff, and the commentary on why we seem to love them so much. What is it about that kind of fantasy fiction that is worthwhile? What is it about the stories that we tell, with stories of heroism and self-sacrifice and things like that? Like, what does it say about us as a society? I think we've come farther. We've evolved some since, you know, even as recently as 3 years ago. Obviously, if you go back to the beginning of the movement when comics started taking over pop culture, it's a longer series of evolution. But I think even in the last 3 years, it's really changed. So, I have a feeling as we cover more of the issues of Super Zero, we may find that, yeah, even since we read it 3 years ago, because I haven't read it since it first came out, but even since then, it's become more relevant, which if that's the case, then I may have to jump on that bandwagon with you, Manny, and start bugging Jimmy and like telling him, hey, Jimmy, go back and read this because it's even more relevant now than when you first did it. So you guys really need to jump back on the bandwagon. Anyway, what are your thoughts? I know you really love this series. So, had you read, the first issue since you first picked it up 3 years ago?
No, not in a while. I think the last time I picked it up was just to show it to somebody else. It was a trade. But, the thing kind of like you're saying, is I have mixed feelings about her character and the way I want to go about it, just because I want her to have that imagination and that drive that you get out of comic books, but at the same time you have to put them in their place as fantasy, as fiction, as something that's not real. So at the same time, the quote unquote responsible adult in me wants to tell her, hey, you need to slow it down because you're not going to get superpowers. These life altering events are not going to cause you to turn into some vigilante that is going to one day save your town, save the world. So it invokes different emotions, but this book has always brought that idea in my head about, what comics do for me and what comics do for everyone else. You pick certain heroes, certain stories that maybe sometimes you can even relate to. It's not necessarily the same problems on that epic universe world shattering scale, but it's things that you deal with every day. It's fear, it's anxiety, it's courage, it's bravery, it's whatever. There's different characters that deal with these things in different ways. And sometimes you're able to channel that same energy that you got from the book to real life. And I think that's part of, obviously it's Iron Man, it's the MCU and their great storytelling that they've been able to do throughout the years in the MCU that now have led to the April release of Avengers Endgame. That really have put comic books comic book characters, better yet, the forefront of pop culture, to the point where they're being used on athlete shoes, they're being used on in different mediums. Wonder Woman as a feminist icon, you have other characters that are used for different things. And it's something that maybe you wouldn't have seen in a couple years ago. I know I've always loved superheroes and all things of that sort. I know how much of an outcast for a while you were because I was such a fan of Batman. I was such a fan of watching, Static Shock or the Amazing Spider-Man or things like that. It wasn't once you get to a certain age, you're supposed to drop it. But we're now at a day and age where a lot of the newer series on television, on streaming services, on movies are being taken directly from comics. I mean, almost every day you hear about another comic book that's being developed into a television series. I mean, just yesterday we got a trailer for Netflix's The Umbrella Academy, which was Gerard Way's book over at Dark Horse. Or you have... I don't know. Just I can't think of it. There's just so much comic books have and heroes have been part of such a big part now of society, and I think her character is one that's right before all of that. So it's really interesting. I would love to see this book come back to Aftershock and kind of see how much momentum it can get now. Maybe it's the right book. Maybe it was at the wrong time. And I think it would do so well today rather than it did a few years ago.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. And I am interested, though. I wonder if Drusilla's commentary on Batman, like her take on Batman, is that Jimmy's take or Jimmy and Amanda's take? Or is that them speaking through the character? Because at times, like when she's talking about why anybody would choose to be a comic book creator, I know they're doing that tongue in cheek, because I've heard them talk about that before, about how you got to make your hay while you can, because, there are no benefits, no retirement, no this, no that. So I know that's how they feel about that. Is this how they feel about Batman with what she's what she's saying. And you're such a Batman fan. I mean, do you believe that? You believe he has revenge in his blood and it makes him something more than human? I guess that's been a debate that's gone on. Mm-hmm. Does Batman really have superpowers? Is he just...
You know, I mean, can anybody, he does say, you know, vengeance is the night and things like that. And I've often thought about that, especially actually more lately now than before. Just really Batman's motives and his drive is just that one event, really. And it always goes back to it. And lately it's actually bugged me a little bit and kind of had me a little bit, a little off on Batman, because he's set on revenge. But I guess what makes him different is just his sense of justice. There's also a line that he won't cross. That kind of brings me back. I wouldn't necessarily say it's revenge. I don't agree with it, because if it was revenge, if it's not revenge, it's him not wanting others to have to go through what he did. And so that's his mission, that's his goal, and he's going to do it in a way where he also doesn't have to cross that line. Which, of course, we've seen different versions of the story where he may have crossed the line, or he has to, or whatever, and he doesn't use a gun, et cetera, et cetera. So no, I don't necessarily agree that he's just after revenge. He's after trying to save grief, kind of like you do as a parent. You don't want your kids to have to learn the lessons the hard way, so you're going to try and prevent that. I feel like it's the same way.
Yeah, I kind of agree with you in that Tom King he's really been leaning into the origin motivations of Batman. It's kind of a emotional or motivational examination of the character. And being this Tom King, you know, he can't do that over one arc or two arc or five arcs. It's got to be like, you know, 20 arcs or whatever, 15 arcs, right? I guess 15, 16 arcs. So anyway, last thing I'll say about Super Zero is the artwork. I'm totally okay with Jimmy wanting Rafael Della Torre on the book and to do it with him. I like this book more than Animosity, so I'd rather have Raphael working on this. But what's interesting is comparing the artwork between the two. Same artist, but different colorist. And so I guess that's where I have to go to point to the differences. Animosity, to me, the art is not as... The line work's not as fine. And so the art doesn't have quite the fluidity. I think that the art in Super Zero, it really comes across as delicate in a way, which really gives it some life, as opposed to Animosity, where the lines are thicker and right away the art has more weight to it and it feels more solid and thus more static, as opposed to feeling like fluid and being able to feel movement. And then as far as the colors go, I mean, it's Marcelo Maiello, and the colors in this book are absolutely exquisite. This might be the best work I've ever seen Marcelo do. And of course, there are a few panels where he does his trademark diachromatic, where he only uses a couple colors and really comes across. Like when I picked up this book to read it again after not having read it for a long time, I didn't even look at the creator page, the credits, and I'm just reading through, and I get to that panel and I'm like, whoa, wait a second, did Marcelo color this? I forgot. And I went back and looked, and sure enough, because it's just a trademark thing that he does, where he'll go down to just two or three colors in a panel for effect, and it works exquisitely, works so well to give impact and to really highlight a particular panel or a moment in a book. And then the last thing I'll say about the art, also to do with what Marcelo does, is when Drusilla's dreaming, how he takes away the borders on the panels and colors it just slightly different enough to make it seem like a dream sequence. Like the colors are just a little muted. It's like everything almost has like a bit of a haze over it, which signifies obviously that this is not the quote unquote real world. So I think the art is top notch. And I mean, when I sit here and I look at it and I examine it, it's like, yeah, you know, you kind of got to agree with Jimmy. I'd hate to see this book come back without Raphael, because he does such an exquisite job on this art, and he has this world fully realized. He has the tone down, the mood, and I think you got to get Marcello back as well, because a lot of that mood is set by kind of the bright colors that are used, because it is kind of an uplifting book, and Drusilla is nothing if not effervescent and optimistic that she can unlock her superheroic powers. And so it all works really, really well together, despite the fact that they are dealing with some issues which may be a little more adult and not quite as fun or as superheroic or as Silver Agey or whatever you want to call it. So any comments on the art from you, Manny?
I mean, no, just you've already said everything that I probably would have said. I there are a couple of panels that I really like the way that he just uses like a single color, or like you said, two colors, and it really kind of like shows the seriousness of a certain maybe motion or a certain point in the panel where you're supposed to have your focus. And I think that's really cool, because it's supposed to be an important moment and you're supposed to pay attention to this spot. So here you go. No ifs or buts about it. So yeah, it's done really well. I get it. I can see why he would want to work with them again. And it's kind of what I'm saying. If this book were to come out now, I think it would do so much better, because, not just because of the title itself, but you're going to have Jimmy's name on it. You're going to have Rafael de la Torre's name on there, where, he worked on Animosity and a bunch of people from there. So I think there'd be a lot more buzz around it than there was a couple of years back.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the book would do really, really well if it were ever to come back. So, all right, I think that's going to do it for this episode, everybody. But before we sign off, I wanted to make an announcement. I mentioned it a few times last week on the podcast, and we're going to be doing a 12 Days of Christmas giveaway. So it starts this Friday on the 14th of December, and basically we're going to be giving away a trade every day for the 12 days leading up to Christmas. So we'll probably coincide the giveaways to some extent to what we cover on that podcast for that particular day. And the way you can win is if you retweet the episode for that day. Everybody who retweets it will be entered into a drawing to win the trade of that day. So starting on the 14th, we're going to be giving away the first volume of Justice League, the Scott Snyder run, it's the Justice League Spotlight episode on the 14th, and we will be giving away Justice League Volume 1. And then for the next day, doing the Thanos chronology, so we'll be giving away a Thanos trade, not sure which one yet. For the 16th, obviously Valiant Sunday, we'll be giving away a Valiant trade. And I haven't decided. I think we're going to give away a Superman trade too. So, I guess kudos to those who can retweet both episodes on Sundays and Mondays when we put out two Superman trade. We're going to be giving away a World of Krypton trade, and then on the 17th for Aftershock Monday, we're going to be giving away an Animosity trade, Animosity Volume 1. For Marvel Monday, I believe I have a Spider-Man trade that we're going to be giving away. For the 16th spotlight on Uncanny X-Men, we'll have an Uncanny X-Men trade to give away. I'm not sure if I'm going to do an Essentials from the early days of Uncanny X-Men or but it'll be an X-Men trade of some sort. Don't know what I'm going to do yet for New Comics Wednesday or for Top Cow. So stay tuned for all that stuff. But I'll have a full list, get my act together sometime this week and put up a full list for you. You'll all know which days you need to retweet for each particular trade that you want to win. And The only caveat, you can retweet as many times as you want, but it, you know, obviously it's going to be one entry per person per day. And once you win, then you're not going to be eligible to win again. So, cause I just want to keep it fair. I don't want one person like, you know, winning four or five. I just want everybody to get a chance to get a trade or two. And some of the trades will be signed. I know at some point I'm going to give away a letter 44 trade signed by Charles Soule. And I also have the trade of the dead hand by Kyle Higgins that's signed by Kyle, as well as the artist Stephen Mooney, that we're going to give away during that 12 days of the Comic Source Christmas as well. So anyway, stay tuned for details. I should have all the details up and all worked out sometime this early this week. Hopefully I'll be able to announce them hopefully Tuesday on Tuesday's episodes. So tomorrow, if not, then for sure Wednesday, I'll get all the rules up and you guys will be able to check it out. So once again, I want to thank everybody for joining Manny and I to talk about Super Zero. Please tell your friends about our podcast. Subscribe, rate us on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, or whatever platform you use to listen to the show. The ratings really help with our visibility and our ability to reach new listeners, especially 5-star reviews on Apple. Also, all past episodes of the podcast are available on all those platforms, as well as at lrmonline.com. While you're at the site, please check out all the other pop culture coverage of your favorite and upcoming movies and TV shows. If you want to email us, the email address is thecomicsourceblog@gmail.com. Or you can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/thecomicsource. Do a search for The Comic Source on Facebook and Instagram to follow us on those social platforms. All three spots are great places to find out when we release new episodes, as well as follow all our convention coverage. So once again, we want to thank everybody for listening, and we'll talk to you next time.